Hi, you are listening to Fairy and Fantasy Session 13. Today we get to know our hero, Sir Gawain, but first we take a closer look at the Green Knight's little Christmas game.
Okay, so last time we'd gotten as far as the entrance of the Green Knight into the court, and we were looking some at his depiction and sort of talking about that. I want to get to, because we didn't even get to last time, the game that he proposes, right? He emphasizes, obviously, he's not there for fighting, right? He says, I've got, you know, armor and weapons, which I left at home, and if I were to want to fight, you know, I could have come armed. Not that there's any point, because I could lick all of you without even trying, but anyway, you know, that would be an option if we were going in that direction, but we're not. And he points to, what is the evidence that he's not come to fight?
He's not wearing armor.
He's not wearing armor or shoes. Yeah, exactly.
He's carrying a plant.
Yes, he's carrying a holly bough, right? Hey, we're just having fun here. This is all fun. Oh, and this huge axe. But even the huge axe is fun in a huge axe kind of way, right? I mean, it's all like highly decorated. It's got ribbons and stuff hanging on it. I mean, it's very pretty. And he offers it, of course, as the prize. This is the inducement. Anybody who wants this axe, you know, you can keep it for yourself. You know, after you undertake the game. What are the terms that he proposes initially? I want to make sure that we get this exactly right so that we can understand the response and what's going on here. What exactly does he propose? Okay?
That he will let anyone come up and do what they want with the axe to him, so either kill him or just poke him with it. And then whatever they do, he will do to them in a year.
Yeah, let's exchange strokes, right? You take this axe, and you get one free hit, and I won't resist. I'll stand here and let it go. Let's see, this is on page 38. Line 284. For thee I crave in this court a Christmas garment. Hey, let's play a Christmas game. Everybody loves this game. For it is Yule and New Year, and here are yape money. If any so hardy in this who holds himselven, be so bold in his blood, brine in his head, that dar stiffly streaker a stroke for another, I shall give him of me gift this gizin reacher, this axe that is heavy enough to handle as him leakes, and he shall bead the first boor as bad as he sitte. Okay, now notice the terms. He says, you know, the game is going to be that dar stiffly streak a stroke for an other. Strike a stroke in exchange for another one. And he, you know, comes again. He shall bead the fierce boor as bad as he sitte. You know, I'm not going to put on armor or anything. I'm not armed right now. Just like I'm sitting here right now, I'll let you hit me. However, and I'll bear, I shall bite it, I'll bear it. But notice what he emphasizes. What kind of person is going to take up this challenge? What is this, what is being challenged here? What does he emphasize about the person who would take it up? Yeah, Brittany?
Yes, me.
Oh, sorry, it's okay. I was pointing in a straight line. Brittany, go ahead.
Be so bold in his blood.
Yeah, boldness, right? He doesn't. This is a game that is going to require bravery, right? But it seems really strange. Nobody responds, right? And this is when he then taunts them. Oh, is this Arthur's house? Everybody afraid, and no one's even hit anybody. And Arthur responds by explaining, look, the problem is not that we're not brave enough. The problem is we think you're an idiot. I mean, what the heck? You're unarmed, going to take a blow from that axe, which is enormous. I mean, your chances of survival are almost nil, and then in exchange afterwards, you're going to hit me back? I mean, it's just, it doesn't process. Like, what on earth is going on here? Now, I don't think anybody quite anticipates what actually happens. But, oh, I noticed all the whole I'm going to pick up my head and ride out thing, right? Oh, I should have seen that clause coming. I mean, I don't think anyone is quite anticipating that, but there's clearly something not quite right here. I mean, I think it's fairly understandable that Arthur and his knights are sitting around saying, is this a trick question here? I mean, how is this going to work? Especially, again, since he emphasizes boldness. This is not just a feat of strength. Hi, I'm a strange, very tall, and very green person. See if you are, you know, step right up and see if you're strong enough to hack off my head in one blow. You know, free axe for the winner. I mean, that's not the way that he phrases it, though it kind of sounds like that's sort of what it's going to end up being. Right? Can Sir Gawain actually successfully decapitate him in one blow? Hooray! Right? He rang the bell at the top of the thing. There we go. Sir Gawain wins the axe. But obviously, it requires more than just strength and the willingness to decapitate tall green persons. It requires boldness. It requires courage to face, as he keeps emphasizing, to face a stroke again. I'm going to do the same thing to you afterwards, even though that really doesn't seem likely under the initial circumstances. Yeah?
Medieval witchcraft being what it was, a cultural decapitation would probably be enough to cut it.
Well, you know, frankly, probably for even modern medicine, a partial decapitation is going to be pretty hard to overcome. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true. Decapitations didn't always come off on the first hit. It was pretty common for it to take a few hacks before we finally finished the job. But, again, that's one of the things that a medieval person would see in the description of the axe, right? Ooh, with that axe, though, blade like that, with that kind of heft, you know, anyone who, like, knows what he's doing, probably take the head off even of an 8-foot tall guy, you know, with that axe. Especially, notice, how does he stand to the stroke? He says, you know, I'm unarmed. How does he do it? What's his posture?
Here, have my neck.
Yeah, he bends over and bares his neck. Remember, he's got this hair that goes all the way down to his waist. He's got this beard around the front. You know, his hair and his beard look like this huge cape of lovely green hair covering his front. And so he lifts up his hair and bares his neck and leans over. So, I mean, he's making it literally as easy as it is possible to do. He even sort of suggests that, you know, the decapitating stroke seems to be almost his suggestion, right? See, look, here's my neck. Go ahead. Here's the easiest possible blow you could have. I'll help however you like. And I'll stand here and not flinch and not move while you hack away. Go for it. And again, this seems like, I mean, okay, what's the deal here? Again, this seems kind of like a trick question. Look at Arthur's response after the taunt on page 40. Arthur's response on 323, Hothel, be heavenly in asking his niece, and as do folly has freist, fiend are they behoves. Hothel, that means guy. Person, green person. By heaven, you're asking his niece. Niece means like simple, like simple-minded, dumb, I think as we might translate it in colloquial modern American English. And as thou folly hast phrased, fiend are they behoves. As you have sought folly, well, you deserve to find it, I guess. You deserve what's coming to you. This is the most incomprehensible, dumbest proposal for a game I've ever heard. You decapitate me first, and then I'll decapitate you afterwards. But, of course, he's perfectly willing to do it. Until Sir Gawain
politely steps forward and suggests maybe he should do it instead. By the way, I forgot to mention before, you may have been noticing that I'm shamelessly shifting around in my pronunciation of his name. I just wanted to point out that I'm quite unapologetic about that. Many people pronounce his name Gawain. Some people pronounce it Gawain. I do both because that's more fun. And frankly, I think there's justification for that. Gawain, from the rhyming-based poems, especially those which are derived from the French, the emphasis tends to be on the last syllable, Gawain, so that you can rhyme it with other things. Because rhyme is how French verse and this English verse, which derives from it, works, as most of the poems we've been reading so far. That's why when we were reading the tale of Sir Gawain and Dame Ragnall, I was calling him Gawain all the way through that. But here, this is alliterative verse, and the emphasis is on the first syllable, Gawain. He's clearly not Gawain, because the emphasis, the alliteration, is usually on the G, so that's what's clearly supposed to be emphasized. And also, this spelling, you'll notice in the Middle English, also does not suggest a long vowel on the second syllable. We don't usually get the A-I-N or the A-Y-N at the end. It's usually Gawain, G-A-W-A-N or G-A-W-E-N. Not always, but usually. So it does seem in this poem that seems to be sort of how we are invited to pronounce it, at least most of the time. So when we're talking about this poem, I call him Gawain. When we're talking about those other poems, we call him Gawain. Flexibility, that is the way. Anyway, Gawain steps forward to take the game. What's the Green Knight's response? He lays out the game, taunts them, and Arthur steps forward. We have reason to think this was the plan. That is, that it is Arthur that he wants to have to do with. Because look how he responds to Gawain. This is on the next page. Let's see, about line 375. Gawain goes to the Goma with Gizur and Inhonda. So he's taken the axe from Arthur. Arthur jumps up and grabs the axe. Now he's given it to Gawain. Or Gawain, whatever. Gawain goes to the Goma with Gizur and Inhonda, and he badly him beades. He biced never the helder. Then carpes to Sir Gawain, the knicht in the graina. Reform we ur forwardes, ere we fear passa. First, e etherthe, Hathel. Who that thou hattest, that thou may tell it truly, as he truest my. What is the Green Knight's first speech to Gawain there? He wants to reform way ur forwardes? What does that mean?
Repeat the deal.
Right. Well, that's the second question. The first thing is, okay, all right, well, we need to repeat the terms, right? Let's reform our forward, the forwards, the stuff that came before, right? Let's make sure that let's repeat the terms of the deal that we're undertaking here. Make sure that this is all clear. In other words, he sees this is now transferring to a new person. So I have to make sure to reseal, because we don't want this guy to get off on a loophole, right? Be like, well, I never promised to let you hit me again, right? Arthur did. You just let me hit you. Ha-ha, right? So no, we're gonna reinstate the deal. And then he asks, and also, you have to tell me your name. Who are you? In gold faith, quoth the gold knicht, Gawain hata, that bade of this buffet, quat so befall as after, and at this team a 12-month, talk at they another, with what weapon so thou wilt, and with no we ellis on leave. Notice Gawain has actually extended the deal. What are the terms that he emphasizes? What is he agreeing to do?
Well, he agrees to come back in a year. He And not only that, it says that he will take whatever weapon that the Green Knight says and be hit with that.
Yeah, yeah. This is, I agree that at 12 months from now, I'll come back and I'll let you hit me with whatever weapon you like. It's fine. That's up to you. And also, and with no we Ellis only either, right? Alone. That is, you know, one possible loophole of this would be like, okay, yeah, I'll show up and let you hit me, but I'm going to bring my posse. Oh, didn't see that coming. I promised not to hit you. I didn't promise that my posse wouldn't try to hit you while you were trying to hit me, right? So Gawain closes this loophole in advance, right? I'm showing you, Mr. Very Tall Green Person, that I know the terms of the, you know, that I recognize the terms of the deal that you offered, and I'm going to show you that I'm abiding by the spirit of that. Yeah, yeah. By myself, you can hit me with whatever weapons you want.
That other answer again, Sir Gawain, so multi thriva, as I am fairly fine, this dint that thou shall drive.
The Green Knight's response?
Sir Gawain, so multi thriva is a very common Middle English idiom or figure of speech. It's sort of like an intensifier. So multi thriva, it means so might I, you know, thrive, so might I, you know, do well in life. It's like something that you throw in, you know, as sort of an exclamation of, you know, not joy exactly, but, you know, something you might say when you, like, I don't know, meet somebody you haven't seen for a long time on a sidewalk or something, you know. Aaron, so multi-thriva, how are you doing? Right? You know, I mean, it's an exclamation. So he seems that he's heard of Gawain, and he's surprised, and it seems pleased. Sir Gawain, so multi-thriva, as I am fairly fine, this dint that thou shalt thriva. He is fairly fine? What do you make of that? Our translation is not exceptionally close there. He gets the general spirit of it, but it's a little stronger in the original, Aaron.
Is it like, I'm glad you're the one to do this?
Yeah, yeah, I'm really glad. I'm really glad that this dint, this blow, that you will drive it. I'm glad that you're going to be the one hitting me. Really glad.
And then he emphasizes it in the next lines. Begog, quod the Grain Knicht, Sir Gawain, may likas that he shall fang at the first that he have friest hera. And thou hast readily rehearsed, be raisin folk truer, clanly all the covenant that either king asked.
Notice, you have repeated well all of the covenant, all of the promise that I asked the king. He's here saying that I was proposing that to Arthur. That's plainly was his plan A. But apparently, he loves plan B. Perfectly happy with plan B. Sir Gawain, excellent. Jordan?
I find the somewhat like Reaver really conspicuous, because if things go to plan through Gawain, then he's not going to think of it very much.
It is a kind of a funny expression to use right then.
It's one of the few places I'm willing to credit translating. This is by my living bones that really captures the eye of people. They're not going to be living bones.
Right. Especially since we're going to explicitly mention his neck bones, which will, you know, as the axe passes through. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think that's lovely. Now, but notice, after this, after expressing how delighted he is that it's Sir Gawain who's going to be chopping his head off today. Hi, I'm Sir Gawain. I'll be chopping your head off today. service with a smile from Sir Gawain. But he also now adds something, right? He says, yeah, yeah, no, you did a great job. That's exactly what the game was. And then he adds, Saf that thou shalt sicker me, seja, be thee trouth, that thou shalt secha me thyself, whereso thou hopest, he might be found upon folder, and folk the such wages,
as thou dalest may to die before this doth reach.
This is new. He didn't ask Arthur this. What does he add?
You've to come find me.
Yeah. A 12-month, yeah. But at my place, not here. I'm not coming back. I mean, not that he would anyway, so far as they could tell. But anyway, or maybe he's never going to leave, right? But anyway, in a 12-month, when we have our thing, you have to come seek me. And then Gawain asks where, very sensibly, and he won't tell him. I'll tell you after the decapitation. All right. And he jokes about it. That is, the Green Knight jokes about it. Well, you know, if you cut my head off and I die, well, then you don't need to know, do you? And you can just hang out, no problems. But, you know, if it's still relevant in a few minutes, I'll tell you then. And this is not only, again, one thing that I want to emphasize about this, one thing I think is really important to take away from this, is the tone of all of this. The Green Knight seems to be really enjoying himself. This is fun. I mean, you know, decapitating people might not seem to us like a, you know, Christmas game. I don't recommend you start any family traditions along this line, but he's clearly having fun with it. And this seems to be one of the things that is putting the people off. They don't know how to parse this. Are we being threatened here? Are we going to be attacked by this very tall and remarkably green person? And this, I mean, we see this in Arthur's response. You, I think, are a crazy person. Or at least an idiot. But, all right. I guess you'll get what's coming to you. But he's just, it seems to be having a heck of a time, the Green Knight. Yeah, Taylor? Well, see, I think that that has to be one of the things behind the initial silence, when everyone's like, something is not adding up here. Something wouldn't be adding up, I think, if he were a normally sized and colored person, right? I mean, if he were just like a normal-looking dude who came in and says, hey, I've got an idea, how about you cut my head off? I mean, they would still, I'm sure, think he's crazy, but he might only be crazy then. This is weird. There's something. Again, I don't think that they're anticipating exactly what they see. I mean, their response when he picks up his head is not, oh, yeah, I knew it, right? Sure enough, he just picked up his head and rode off, right? I mean, that's not their response. They're pretty surprised when he picks up his head and rides off. But at the same time, yeah, there is this sense, we don't know what's coming, but this is not quite right. But especially, I think the cues that the Green Knight is giving are also really strange. Again, he's seems pleased as anything, is laughing, and he's making jokes at his own expense here. And, oh, well, probably my address won't be necessary, will it? Ha, ha, ha. Right? I mean, what do they do with that? Yeah. So, what do you take from the description of the decapitation and subsequent eerie events? That is, what struck you about that? How... anything sort of emphasized that you thought interesting? What were your responses to the decapitation and what happened after?
I thought Arthur's reaction after the whole thing was kind of funny. He was like, oh, well, that was exciting. How about dinner?
Right, exactly. Yeah, Arthur's completely self-conscious, let's smooth this over and laugh about this now moment is I think, really, really funny. And a very sophisticated piece of characterization. There are a lot of moments in this poem. It's one of the reasons, by the way, that I think, I mean, that this poet is like a genuine genius, and this is a wonderful poem and has lots of merits. However, I think one of the reasons it has achieved the status that it has in the canon is that it is one of the medieval poems that really appeals to modern readers because it has a lot of touches. It feels a little bit less foreign in many ways than some other medieval poetry because it has some touches that like a modern novelist would appreciate and would relate to. There are aspects of characterization here that we don't really see all the time in other medieval poems, like this moment in especial, that moment when, Arthur's like, turns to Gawain and he's like, let's laugh. Ha ha, keep laughing. Okay, Gawain, Guinevere over there is just about to faint, right? Let's yuck it up and we'll put up put up your new axe there, Gawain. Are you cute enough? Har, har, har. Let's keep the... I mean, that moment is really... is really interesting, and I think very unusual. It is a very novelistic touch, and we'll see a bunch of those. Even the way that we get the descriptions, for instance, of Sir Gawain and the beautiful lady of the castle at dinner, for instance, and the games that they play after dinner, and we will see for next time in the long conversations that we get between Sir Gawain and the lady, against some moments of remarkable psychological realism and perceptiveness in the depiction of their conversation, which is unusual in medieval poetry just because it's not something in general that medieval poetry was as interested in. We, modern readers and modern novelists, are thoroughly obsessed with it, and it seems... for some people, it can be the sole premise of a novel, that is, the psychological realism of dialogue. Like, let's tell a really long story in which nothing happens, but people talk very realistically to each other, is a kind of thing that modern readers can really enjoy. Medieval readers would not have really enjoyed that kind of story much at all. Anyway, it's just a difference in focus, a difference in interest. But anyway, yeah, there are those moments, which are very interesting, I think, in this poem. But the decapitation scene, I want to go back to that. Marta?
Well, I was just kind of struck by how, like, gruesome it really is. He bares his neck, and then the blade comes down, and then the blood sprays forth, and the bones crack, and it rolls on the ground. It's just really, they have a good time with the description.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this is... the alliteration is especially fun in the decapitation line, where we get and shrank through the sheer grace, shalda hit in twina. We get that the alliteration is on the sound as the axe comes shearing through his neck, and then it hits the ground, and the bit of the brune stale bot on the ground. So we got the. As the axe falls down, he's really having fun with this description. The fair heide fro the house hit to the earth. The fail hit foined with her feta. There hit forth rolled. I mean, we get the rolling of the head, which goes over to their feet, and they kind of kick it back into play, as it bounces over, to where the knights are standing and looking. The blood bried fro the body, that bluked on the grainer. So we get this description of not only the blood spurting out, but also now the contrast of the red blood staining all of that beautiful green clothing and jewelry that we were describing before. But stiffly he start forth upon stiff shunkis, and runishly he racked out, there as rank as stonden, lacht to his lovely head, and lifted up sona, and sithen boas to his blonk.
the bridle he catches, steppes into a stelbaue, and straight as a lofter, and his head be the hairer in his horned halders, and as sadly the sedge him in his saddle setter, as none on hap had him eyelid, though headless newer instead. He brayed his bluck aboot, that ugly body that blader, money of him had duter, but sorry, I can't even read that with this pretty one. Many of him had duter. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure they did. Many were a little uncertain about this guy at this point. Yep, this is a delightful understatement in that. Many of him had duter. Be that his raisins were raid. Yes, it doesn't really make sense. That ugly body, that blader. I mean, we just image blood is still like, you know, like squirting up out of the neck of the corpse as he's sitting there in his horse. At the moment, even, you know, it would be bad enough if he just picked up his head and picked up the head and the head started to talk, or if the head started to talk while it was still rolling around or whatever. But he just like takes the head and he mounts up on his horse, then he just sits there for a minute, mounted, holding his head. And everyone's like, huh. Yeah, and he just sits there casually, you know, as if nothing were wrong, as if he were not, you know, headless as he is. Noch headless nu. For the head in his hand he haldes up even toward the darest on the desa, he dresses the fasa, and he lift up the eyelids and looked full broader, and mailed thus much with his mouth, as ye may nu hera. Loka Gawen, thou beg graith to go as thou hatest, and light as lately till thou may, Luda, fiende. As thou hast hater in this halla, heranda this kniektes, to the grain chapel thou chose, e charge they to fotter. Such a dunt as thou hast dealt, deserved thou habas, to be yelderly yolden on New Year's morn. Now, what do you make of the decapitated head's tone? That is, one might make assumptions, and it's hard not to imagine if you were doing, you know, if you sort of imagine putting this on stage or doing a film version of it, it's hard to imagine the voice of the decapitated head not being kind of ominous. You know, like, you know, you'd be like, look, Gawain, be thou gratha, right? I mean, it'd be, but I'm not sure. What do you think? I mean, if you didn't know already that it was a decapitated head speaking, would the tone strike you as particularly different from his previous tone, Carol?
Kind of like, good job, Gawain. That was awesome. That was amazing. You know,
yeah, my turn now, right? Yeah. To be great that to go as the hate is. Yeah, make sure you go as you said.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really distinguish a very different tone here. He seems to be talking like he talked before. And again, I think that contrast, one of the things which has made this scene so eerie all the way through has been the contrast between the Green Knight's, like, what exactly he's proposing and the tone and everything, you know, like this, like, what, you know, just this strange sort of clashing set of cues here. What exactly is going on? He's actually, is he suicidal? He doesn't sound suicidal. What's happening here? And now here, I mean, I think we can see a similar, almost, perhaps, playful tone still. I mean, he speaks a little more sternly there at the end. For thee may for to finda, if thou freistest, filest thou never. Therefore come, other recreant be called they behoves. You know, come find me or be called recreant. It's not that you couldn't do this, you know, with, you know, heavily ominous speech, some kind of distorted voice from the decapitated head. But I don't know. With a runish root, the Rhinus he tornus, hollowed out at the hall door, his head in his hand, that the fear of the flint flow... too many Fs. Got tangled up. I'll come in again. That the fear of the flint flow fro full hoves, to quat kith he become, canoe non there, never more than they wist from quethen he was wonen. What then? The king and Gawain thara, at that grain they lauch and grena,
yet brave it was it Fulbara, a marvel among the men.
And it's in the next line that he's letting no semblant be sena, but say the fulgia to the comelich quain with curte speech,
dera dama, today, de may you never.
He's really freaked out by this, but he's not letting it show. And instead, he is saying winsome things to the queen. One of the interesting things, I think, there at the end of the scene is the fact that they're kind of just connecting it to the beginning of the scene, right? And he goes where, well, nobody knows where he went, but just as nobody knew where he came from in the first place. Guy leaving on horseback, holding his head by the hair. I mean, only slightly less weird anyway than huge 8-foot green guy walking in the door. I mean, it was weird the first time, it was a little weirder the second time, but really same category of weirdness. And they, both Arthur and Gawain, respond by laughing. Laughing and grinning. That was awesome. Do you see him pick up his head? Yep. Sure was a marvel, wasn't it? Now, of course, the tone shifts as we look towards next year, right? When most of the year passes and Sir Gawain decides he's got to go find this green chapel. How does the court respond? Yeah, they're really sad. I mean, here's Gawain going to his death, right? Very sad. They urge him not to go. Does Gawain ever hesitate? Do we see him like debating, oh, should I do it? Should I not do it? No, not really. No, he's pretty resolute about it. And that seems to be pretty genuine. Remember his reaction when he's talking with his host, the knight of the castle that he ends up with for Christmas, right? And he tells him, you know, the next morning he's like, oh, you should stay. And Gawain's like, I wish I could. I'm sorry. I've got to go and be decapitated. And I still don't know where the Green Chapel is. And the knight says, oh, the Green Chapel? Yeah, it's like 2 miles away. No problem, just stay on. And then, you know, you can leave on New Year's morning and you'll be there by lunchtime, right? So, to keep your decapitation appointment. And you know, so you can hang out here in the meantime. And how does Sir Gawain respond when he tells them this about where the Green Chapel is and that it's so close? Mac? Yeah, they're very affectionate. Well, this guy, I mean, his host, is so jovial and so happy. I mean, yeah, he's like a, you know, really laughy, huggy kind of guy. And, yeah, so no, he seems to be genuinely relieved. Oh, you know, I'm going to be, you know, he's not, we saw in his first reaction, he was not looking for a loophole. Right? In fact, he closed potential loopholes of his own volition in his response. Here, he's still not looking for loopholes. He is not at all being like, well, you know, I looked, couldn't find the Green Chapel, not my fault, right? I did my due diligence in searching high and low, even went into Wales, I looked everywhere, but, you know, at the end of the day, no Green Chapel, guess I'm headed home. I mean, he doesn't seem to be thinking in that direction at all. He seems genuinely anxious to find it, and genuinely relieved when he's told that it's right next door and he's going to be able to keep his appointment. So however much he may in fact be dreading what seems like his imminent decapitation, he does not seem to really shrink from it, unlike the court, who is, now of course it's not their honor at stake, right? I mean, they're not the ones who made the promise that they have to keep, but they're sad to see him go. They don't want him to leave, but he is resolute. What do we learn about him? We get a long description of his character and his virtues. This might not have struck you as a an especially thrilling stanza in this poem, so I want to make sure to point it out in case your eyes crossed at this time. This is right after the description of his stuff, right? We get his really nice clothing and armor, and then we get his shield. What's the device on his shield? Yeah, it's a pentangle, right, called the Endless Knot. So it's a five-pointed star. I'm doing it really badly in the air, but you know how it goes. My sons can draw them. And the pentangle is the sign of him and of his virtues, right? And we have the stanza, of course, that I'm referring to is the famous description of Sir Gawain's five fives. Right? Let's get some 5-5 action here. Page 64. Here we are told this is Sir Gawain in a nutshell. Line 640. First he was funden, faultless in his fieve witties. That's 5 number 1. His fieve witties? The translation there is accurate. Wit means his senses. So his fives, he's faultless in his five senses, his fieve witties. And eft filed never the freak in his fieve fingers. Freke doesn't mean freak, by the way. It just means guy. Like we have a lot of words for dude in Old English and Middle English. Freak is one of them. Filed never the freak with his fieve fingers. So his five senses are faultless and his five fingers have never failed. Those are his first two fives. So here we have, clearly, we're talking about his body, right? His physical abilities. He is, you know, he is a fantastic physical specimen, very strong, excellent, like, eyesight, apparently, peerless sense of smell. That sounds great. And all his affiance upon Folda was in the fieve wounds that Christ caught on the cross, as the Creed tell us. So the third five is? The five wounds of Christ. His faith, which is placed in the five wounds of Christ. What are the five wounds of Christ? Hand, foot, spear in the side. Yeah. So he believes in the crucifixion and the passion of Christ. This is a big deal. And what else? Yes. The five joys that the Henda Heaven Queen had of her childa, the five joys of Mary. There are different versions of the five joys of Mary. The most traditional list, I think, is the Annunciation, the Nativity, the Resurrection, the Ascension of Christ, and then her own Assumption. At the end. Though again, that's not always. Sometimes there's her assumption is not in the list, and one of the early events in Christ's life is. Anyway, whatever. When does he think about, what is the relevance that the five joys of Mary have to him? What are we told about it? Jordan? Yes. He's got the Virgin Mary on the inside of his shield so that he can see it, right? It's not the sign that he bears on the outside, which is for everyone else to see. It's on the inside where he can see it. So he can look down at the image of the Virgin Mary while in battle, and this is the context that we're given for the fourth five here. And wheresoever this morn in melee was stad, whenever he's in battle, in melee, his throw thought was in that, through all other things, that all his forceness he fung at the five joys. He gets all of his force from contemplation of the five joys of Mary. So this is not just sort of abstract, you know, piety on his part, but connected with his success in battle, we are told. And this is why he's got her image painted on the inside of his shield. The fifth five is in particularly interesting. So we've got two physical ones. his senses and his fingers, the two spiritual ones, the five wounds of Christ and the five joys of the Virgin, and the fifth five are five virtues which particularly characterize him, right? Freundschaft and fellowship, forbei all thing. His kleinness and his courtesia, crooked were never. In pite, that passes all pointis. The first four are very important, but comparatively easy. Freundschaft and fellowship are different contexts of being nice to people. Fellowship is meaning friendship, that is, your relationship with your peers. Freundschaft is your relationship with people who are below you in society. So that is, he is generous to those who are beneath him in society, and he is loyal and friendly with those who are his equals in society. Fellowship and friendship. Sorry, Freundschaft and fellowship, which is like friendship. His kleinness and his courtesia. Purity and politeness, I think, is actually a really good translation of these two. Kleinness means purity, moral purity. Remember, kleinness, I mentioned, is the title of one of the other poems in this manuscript, probably written by this guy. He wrote a whole poem on the subject of moral kleinness. And courtesia. Courtesia, a little bit more than politeness, but that's still pretty much what we're getting at. Cleanness and courtesy. And those of you who have read some other medieval literature about courtesia will know that those two things are not always going hand in hand. That is, one manifestation of courtesia is love which is called courtly love. Love language. Wooing. Usually, almost in fact, exclusively married people. So, I mean, it's the connection between courtesia and the love tradition, which is well established by now, and of which, you know, to which there were many objections on moral grounds, is an issue. As I say, courtesia and kleinness are not generally synonymous. So it's interesting that he, it seems, is the master of them both. Pite is the most complicated one of them because it can have two meanings. It can mean pity, which can mean something like mercy that you show to your foes that you have overcome in battle, for instance, which we see being a very important virtue with knights in other medieval stories. But it also can mean piety. You'll notice that this translator, like many modern readers, prefer the pity angle to the piety angle. But, of course, even if we think of it as pity, this should not excuse us from remembering that that 40% of his fives were exclusively focused on his piety, right? And indeed, the implication is that the first two fives, which are his physical prowess, are in fact premised upon the second two, as his strength in battle comes from his meditation on the joys of the Virgin. And we get the emphasis on that last five. Pite, that passes all pointes. This is the most important, the greatest of them all, in some sense. This is the virtuous and noble Sir Gawain, whom everyone weeps when he leaves and everyone cheers when he arrives. And I love the speech from our jovial host, who says that for the rest of his life, the whole rest of his life will be better just knowing that he had Sir Gawain as his guest at Christmas time one year. That is how famous and awesome Sir Gawain is. At the beginning of class next time, I want to be looking at first his arrival at the castle, but then I want to be looking at the second deal that he strikes and what happens after. Enjoy the hunting scenes. If you don't already know how to dismember a deer, you soon will.
All right, on to part three of the poem for next time, after which you will know precisely how to dismember a deer with elegance and aplomb. I was also going to say that you should pay careful attention to the scenes in which the stunningly beautiful lady of the castle corners Sir Gawain in his bedroom, but I figured you probably wouldn't need me to tell you that. Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.